Blog Talk Radio.
And welcome once again to PWT Talks NXT. I'm your host for the evening, Nate Lindberg, and you can follow me on Twitter at Nate Lindberg. I write the NXT hits and misses, and I do have one up on pwtorch.com if you'd like to check out what I thought of tonight's show. So we're here to talk tonight about NXT 2.0 for May 24th, 2022, as we start building to NXT's In Your House Premium Live Event, as they are now calling it. I'll never get used to that. They're always pay-per-views in my head, but Premium Live Event nonetheless. We're actually starting to build up to that, and we've got about three matches already on that card, so it's starting to finally take some shape. So with me tonight to talk about NXT 2.0 is Doc Bruce Hazelwood.
Thank you, Nate. I am Bruce Lee Hazelwood. You can find me on Twitter at B_Lee253. I am one of the two rotating live reporters for NXT 2.0. Thank you to Kelly and to yourself for filling in for me last week as I celebrated my 34th birthday, which leads me to, I thought about it, this time next year, I will no longer be in that coveted 18 to 34 demo.
Oh my God. Me either.
Yeah. Both of us. Yeah. It's that kind of puts things into perspective, doesn't it, Nate?
Yeah. I mean, I guess I can't rag on Kelly for being the old guy here, cause I'm the old guy, even if it is by 2 months at this point, but hey, you know, yeah, that makes me feel a little old. Last week I was in a meeting at work. I actually had to go into work. I don't do that anymore. I'm pretty much remote. And there's a whole bunch of new people in this meeting. It's probably about 20 or so people in the room. And going around the room kind of introducing new people. And there's one intern who's, you know, happened to say she was born in 2001. And I'm just like, oh, my God, I remember 2001 just like it was yesterday. Ugh. Anyway, enough about depressing things like getting older. Let's talk depressing things like NXT. But actually, tonight really wasn't a bad show. I'm going to give it a thumbs up all around. I mean, you guys know I haven't been super, super high on NXT 2.0 since the rebrand for the most part. But tonight, and even last week for that matter, I think were pretty solid shows. What do you think overall about tonight's show, Bruce?
So I can't say anything about last week's show, but in regards to tonight's show, there were a lot less negatives that I had compared to my recent reports, and I felt like there were more positives coming out of tonight's show. They packed 8 matches into it, and most of them were under 4 minutes, but I think they served their purpose well. And while I didn't like how they got to everything that's going to happen at In Your House, I do appreciate that they at least are working toward In Your House with how do I put this? Stories that aren't just being microwaved, that they've been going on for a bit.
Yeah, exactly. I agree. I think they're doing a decent job building up to In Your House. It hasn't been perfect, but definitely it's definitely been a halfway decent build. So let's get right into the main event for tonight. Main event was Bron Breakker and Duke Hudson. And that went about 11 minutes and 2 seconds. And we saw Duke Hudson take the win via disqualification. Right at the beginning of the match, Joe Gacy and his two goons, his two druids that he stole from The Undertaker, showed up on a platform, that platform that they've got above the crowd, kind of just to continue with the mind games that they had been doing throughout the night. They had basically like hidden a Polaroid of Breakker and his family from like 20 years ago in the locker room that he discovered. They showed a video of Bron Breakker running, I think it was like an 80-something yard touchdown. I think it was a high school football game that his father couldn't attend, which kind of brought up some negative emotions there for him as well. Just continuing to play with those mind games. And that also bled through into the match here where they showed up on that platform and eventually made their way down ringside and kind of interjected themselves in the match. Bron Breakker got a steel chair and kind of started fending off Gacy and the two druids. And in his, you know, heated rage, kind of as you would expect from a Steiner, I guess, he turned around and whacked Duke Hudson with the chair, causing that disqualification at 11 minutes, 2 seconds. Now, with the stipulation for the In Your House match, Joe Gacy versus Bron Breakker, it is for the NXT title. And if and the stipulation is if he gets disqualified, he being Bron Breakker, he gets disqualified, he will lose the title to Joe Gacy. So this kind of plays into that a little bit. I really didn't like the finish personally, because I feel like a babyface shouldn't be losing his temper like that. But again, that's also the story they're telling. I'm just not a huge fan of that particular story. I kind of felt like Bron Breakker should have known better in this match tonight. You know, I just feel like it was a stupid move that ended up getting him disqualified. You know, and again, that's the story they're telling. I just don't think it's the greatest story to be telling for your NXT champion, the person that they've kind of, they put all the eggs in one basket of, in terms of the male division anyway. They are still building up other people, but you know, clearly they're strapping the rocket to Bron Breakker. I'm just not a huge fan of the way that the match ended. However, I do have to give some credit here to Duke Hudson. Now, Hudson is not somebody that I really think of in the main event scene. You know, he's kind of been, you know, lower mid card. He's been in the tag division. He's done some comedic stuff. But tonight, I feel like he actually kind of belonged in this match. Not necessarily his backstage. There was a backstage interaction between Bron Breakker and Duke Hudson, which wasn't bad. But, you know, he didn't come across a star there. But in the ring tonight, I feel like he held his own with Bron Breakker. You know, Breakker, I think, is probably, he's got less time in the ring, you know, overall in his career than Duke Hudson does. I'd have to go back and double check that, but I think that's accurate. And I feel like
started in Australia, I'm assuming so.
Yeah. I'm pretty sure. I was saying that without doing the research. So I'm like, you know, but, you know, considering that Breakker's still a lot more green, you know, Breakker's also one of the more polished acts in NXT 2.0 in the male division anyway. And I felt like Duke Hudson, you know, they had a great match. They kind of he held his own. I expected some sort of a schmoz finish like this, you know, wasn't entirely sure how they were going to get there until about midway through the match when everybody started swarming the ring and kind of, you know, circling the ring and everything. And I'm like, all right, this is how it's going to go down. Not a bad match. I'm not a huge fan of this particular finish. I feel like they probably could have got to some sort of a disqualification finish a bit of a different way without making Bron Breakker look like a bit of an idiot. But it is what it is. It's not the worst thing in the world, and it worked. So, Bruce, what did you think about the main event?
If I didn't know any better, I would say that you're reading my report, Nate.
Actually, I'm not, believe it or not.
I know, it was a joke. So regarding that backstage segment, I think that really helped set up the match, because Gacy's been going on and on about how Breakker's so predictable and he's so impulsive, and Hudson walked in, you know, he said, I didn't, you know, that wasn't me, right? But I'm definitely ready for the match. And he kind of mocked, but he basically told Breakker that when a man has nothing to lose, that's when he's most dangerous. And Breakker put him up against the locker. And Hudson, you know, Hudson is deceptively big. He's taller than Breakker. He's one of the taller, outside of Sanga and Von Wagner, he might be the next tallest, biggest person in the men's division in NXT. And so he's a bit, every time I see him, I always forget how big he is. And so it's kind of funny when you have the smaller guy putting the bigger guy up against the locker, but then Hudson just played it off like, see, you're so predictable, just walked off, just like that. So I think that was a good setup, because what happened was exactly what both Hudson and Gacy had said, and that's he's predictable, he's impulsive. When it comes to having that chair, he's going to use it. And, you know, for me, I also don't like how this match came about and ended. I wrote that if you don't want either of them to lose cleanly, then why even set up the interaction last week to get this match? Why not just have Breakker beat someone else, then have all the stuff with the Drews and Gacy after the match? Because, look, WWE, we know, they always have matches that are really just to set up angles and post-match things. It happened in almost every match tonight, and it's very redundant, and it gets old. So switch it up. Just do something different. And to me, I'm guessing they're going to set Hudson up to be as Wade Barrett said during the match, to be the first challenger for whoever wins next Saturday during that title match. But again, how they came about and how they got to this spot is not necessarily how I would have done it. Hudson impressed a bit tonight in the ring, considering that he and Breaker both aren't the most experienced. Sometimes because of his size, like, he's muscular, but his limbs are still very lanky. I mean, that's how big he is. That's how tall he is. So sometimes his offense looks a bit awkward. He kind of looks kind of funny just when he stands around because of how he pushes his chest out and his shoulders back a bit. But I wrote, at the very least, he at least seems like a formidable foe for anybody who steps in the ring with him. And right now, that's about the best you could ask for, because there aren't that many men on the roster aside from size like Sanga and maybe Wagner, even though he's a charisma vacuum, that have that formidable aspect to them. So, you know, the path to getting to this spot, not the greatest, but I think in what they're trying to set up between for Hudson, at least moving forward, it's good for him. The biggest issue for me is that I'm not interested in Breaker versus Gacy. I'm interested in, one, what happened to the other Druids, and two, who are the Druids that are with Gacy right now. I'm assuming we'll find out in your house, but when that is the more intriguing thing to me than the actual feud, that is not how you want your main championship to come off as. And for me, they really need to think about who and how they're going to have Breaker. I'm assuming Breaker's going to win. Breaker's next title challenger appear and come about, because if it's Hudson, okay, I get it. It works. But if it's not, they need to reevaluate how they're going about Breaker's title reign, because it just, while he's been champion, I just haven't felt like there's been that, one, he's been the focus of the show, and two, that there's been any sort of, importance placed upon being NXT champion. It seems more about the mind games and more about the Druids and more about Breaker being impulsive than actually about the championship. So those are the negatives for me. But, you know, as you said, at least they're building towards next week, next Saturday, I should say.
All right. So with that, let's go over to the phone lines and we'll open up the conversation to you guys. So we'll go and we'll talk with Ryan from Cumberland, Maryland. Ryan, what did you think of the show tonight? What do you got for us?
Pretty good show. My first question is on this breakout tournament. Do you see a tournament for tag teams since they've been signing so many wrestlers? I heard they've been getting pretty good ratings lately for this tournament.
They actually had their best ratings last week in a while, if I remember correctly.
Yeah, I think they did. So are you asking if they'll do like a breakout tournament for tag teams?
Yeah, like since they have so many new signings and finding a way to get all these talents on, maybe not this year, but maybe next year do it.
I mean, technically, they do have that in the Dusty Rhodes Tag Team Classic already.
Yeah.
So I'm not sure if they'll do another tag team tournament because they already have one that really, you know, if you look at Inoue and Blade, they really use that tournament to, quote-unquote, break out. So for me, with the Tag Team Classic, both of them happening so recently, I don't see another one happening until the next Dusty Rhodes Classic.
Yeah, I'm pretty much right there. I think, it wouldn't necessarily be a bad idea if, like, in its own in a bubble to have like a breakout tag match, a tag team tournament. But I mean, essentially, that's kind of what they've been using the Dusty Classic for. So I'm with Bruce. I don't think that they would necessarily do something like that until the next time Dusty Classic's coming around. Granted, with Sasha and Naomi having to vacate the titles due to them walking out, I am starting to hear rumors I forget where the heck I was reading it, but there was, I guess, kind of talks about potential call-ups from NXT, so we may end up seeing what the hell's her name now, Casey Catanzaro, what the hell, Casey Catanzaro,
Katana Chance,
thank you, Casey Catanzaro, because it's a dumb name, and Caden Carter, on the main roster sooner rather than later, but we'll see where that goes.
To your credit, Ryan, I can see where you're getting that from, because you have Tony D'Angelo's crew, you have other people that could be put into tag teams, you have Inoue and Blade, you have Guru Raj and whoever he was in the back with. So I can see where the question comes from, but I do think they already have that mechanism built in.
Yeah, same. Any follow up on that, Ryan, or something else?
Next topic is on Diamond Mine. Can you see a new stable being created in that there's a lot of friction between two sides of Diamond Mine and them maybe breaking off and being called something else to feud with the original Diamond Mine?
There's no one left in the original Diamond Mine besides Roderick Strong.
Pretty much. Like, it wouldn't surprise me if they were to do something like that. I mean, it seems like Roderick Strong's the only heel in Diamond Mine at this point. You know, everybody else is kind of leading face. Damon Kemp, I think, is kind of he's a little up in the air right now because he's trying to play, you know, be neutral between the rest of Diamond Mine and Roderick Strong. So kind of see where he falls kind of in the coming weeks here. But I certainly think that there is a breakup for Diamond Mine coming. Whether it's just Roderick Strong breaks off and does his own thing, or winds up leaving the company. He did ask for his release. So really would not surprise me if he gets, he winds up getting that release and he shows up in AEW with the rest of the Undisputed Era or something like that.
And his wife.
Yep, that's a good point. We'll see where that goes. But I do think that there's going to be some sort of breakup, whether or not, the Creeds, Damon Kemp and, what's her name?
Ivy Nile
is on the tip of my tongue. Ivy Nile. Whether they continue to use the Diamond Mine name, whether they continue to be affiliated with one another, that's kind of up in the air at the moment. But I could certainly see them continuing to use the Diamond Mine name, after Roderick Strong winds up breaking off from them, which is what looks like happening. They could completely rebrand to do something different, but I don't know. Actually, the more I'm talking about it, I think I would rather to see them rebrand and do something different because I feel like the Diamond Mine brand has just been damaged repeatedly. Roderick Strong, Roderick Strong couldn't get the job done when he tried to get the North American title. Yeah, he had a decent, a halfway decent, cruiserweight title run, sort of. But regardless, it's basically been they've kind of just been like on the losing end of a lot of matches and almost felt like an afterthought at times where at first it seemed like they wanted Diamond Mine to almost be like kind of have the same spotlight as like Legado del Fantasma or Tony D'Angelo's new faction, which I think they're calling the Family. I don't know. They keep saying the Family, but then they don't show any graphics or anything that say it. I don't know. I'm calling them the Family in my reports and things like that, but regardless, I have no idea what the hell they're actually called. So, but anyway, long story short, I do think a breakup's coming. And I think I think right now, anyway, I would prefer them to rebrand as something other than Diamond Mine. Bruce?
So the biggest thing that concerned me with Diamond Mine in their backstage segment today was the words that came out of Julius and Bruce's mouth, because they basically said, it doesn't matter how hurt you are, you come out and you do your stuff. That is a great way to get yourself permanently injured and on the shelf and, lose matches. So that mentality to me, and it goes back to what, Wade Barrett tonight said something about manning up and like, yo, what does it even mean and why? Because, look, masculinity, for one thing, is terrible. A lot of the things that are terrible in life and that happen in terms of events are because of dude trying to be masculine and thinking and their thoughts about what masculinity is in terms of got to be strong and can't show pain and no emotion, all that stuff. That's just a lot of BS, all right? For me, they need to not peddle this character representation of them as we're going to fight through every injury because they're going to end up getting really hurt. Now, I will say Brutus continues to grow on the mic. I think tonight he was once again very good. He showed a bit of layers. He wasn't yelling the whole time. I do think Julius has regressed a bit on the mic. He sounds very monotone recently, but they're improving and they're getting better. Damon Kemp, I think, came off fine. He really seemed like the person who was just trying to let them know the info and really just play the mediator between them and Roddy Strong. Obviously, something's coming between them. I wonder if the tag team match, I wonder if they're going to have a match with Strong and Kemp versus the Creed brothers, and then the stipulation is whoever wins or whoever loses has to leave Diamond Mine or something. That could happen. But I really just wish they would stop peddling these hyper-masculinist bullshit segments, because it just, it's so bad, especially with what happened earlier today. And just, you know, there's a lot of other ways you can have these stories come about and these angles proceed without having to go into these, you know, these tropes that are just harmful. So for me, that is the main issue that I see and that I hope they work on, but I know they won't, because it's always about playing through pain, manning up, having cojones, whatever. It's just like, come on, just stop that. Because Ivy Nile could probably stretch all of them, and she's not a man. So what does manning up mean to Ivy Nile? And I understand Becky Lynch is the man, but the whole thing with Becky Lynch and being the man is that she was trying to invert that and put it on its head and make everyone realize how stupid it is to talk about manning up and being masculine and all that stuff. So my soapbox aside, the eventual match between Roddy and whoever and the Creed brothers should be fine.
All right, Ryan, what else do you got for us tonight?
Got a question on Nikita Lyons. Kinetics, how long she'll be out of action, or if this is just a storyline possibly to get Tiffany Stratton in the tournament or something else going on here.
That's
I'm
a good question.
You brought this up.
Yeah, I am. It's a good question. We were talking a bit about this with Tom and Kelly in our four-way. The four-way now, because we've added
Fatal
Bruce.
Four-way.
Fatal four-way Twitter DM that we've got going on. So shout out to Kelly. Feel better, man. He's feeling a little bit under the weather this week, as his whole family is. So hope you guys are all feeling better sooner rather than later. Hey, I'm being nice to you, Kelly. How about that? But we were talking about this in the chat. Nikita Lyons, before tonight, before this announcement on the show, I couldn't find anything online, you know, kind of saying that she had been injured otherwise. So I believe that was the announcement that she had been injured. So I'm not 100% sure. I'm personally, and I'm being contrarian to the other three, I believe, I'm personally leaning that it is kayfabe. It's a kayfabe injury that's, you know, allowed Tiffany Stratton to get into this match in a way that doesn't make sense, because it seemed like this whole tournament was basically designed for Lyons to just win and kind of have this under her belt. But the way that they just brought it up really quick and they haven't mentioned anything else about it makes me think it's kayfabe. But I don't know, if it came out that, you know, she is actually legitimately injured, it really wouldn't surprise me either. I guess if it is a legit injury, I guess it would all obviously depends on the extent of the injury. I mean, you know, if she, and I'm just using the knee as an example, but, you know, if she tweaked her knee as opposed to tore her ACL, you know, so unfortunately we don't really have any more information than what was just talked about on the show tonight, but we're certainly starting to speculate. That's for sure. Bruce, what are your thoughts?
So here's why I, and I believe Kelly and Tom, believe that it's actually legit. Generally, if it's a kayfabe injury, they will show some sort of background or a backstage segment or recorded earlier today where there's some kind of attack or an injury happened. And the other reason is that she was such a shoo-in to win this tournament that the timing of her being pulled out because of quote-unquote injury just seems suspect. I have to believe that because of the timing, and the fact that literally no one – I feel like everyone was under the impression that she was going to win the tournament, because that's how the bracket seemed set up. It seemed like Roxanne Perez was going to be the person who has that big – you know, the big versus small match, who gets some offense in but just can't overcome the size and the power and have Lyons win. Because of that, I have to believe that this is legitimate. I haven't, you know, during the show, because I'm doing the report, I haven't checked any sites. I haven't looked around to see if it's legit or if it's kayfabe. I'm sure Fightful Select probably has something up. But to me, without looking at any of that, without, you know, looking up the reports and just considering her trajectory and how they generally go, because look, maybe, what's his name? Maybe Brooks Jensen really does have a broken wrist, and they use that angle to get him surgery, but maybe it's just kayfabe too. Generally, when injuries happen, they do tend to show something of how the injury happened. Think about when Amari Miller came back, and yeah, that happened in the ring, but they showed it. Them not showing it here and her trajectory leads me to believe that there is legitimately something hampering Nikita Lyons to the point that she can't compete in the ring. Now, I'm absolutely fine with her not being in the tournament anymore. I'll just put it that way.
Yeah, me too. Me too. You know, and actually, the more that I think I'm starting to lean that this might be a legit injury as well. I am doing a little bit of looking around the internet right now. Nobody has anything up on any site, you know, that's any more than what was just talked about in, you know, on the show tonight. But I don't know, kind of the more I'm starting to think about it, I think you might be right, you know, because they do have a lot of those, you know, segments and vignettes where they do show an injury or something if it's worked. They do that too if it's not. But
For all we know, AJ Galante is dead, right, after a couple of weeks ago when he got abducted. And look at it this way.
Yeah, that's a good point. What the hell happened to him?
Stratton versus Perez. When you consider the bracket, adding Stratton, having a Perez is the most likely best match you can have in the final with all the women that were involved. So in that regard, and considering that Stratton's character is also one of the more well-refined and defined presentations in the women's division, they made the right choice in replacing her with Stratton. Although they weren't as clear in the backstage segment that the match that they were scheduling was for the chance to be in the final, which kind of confused us. But I think they made as good of a pivot as they could make, considering lines being pulled from the tournament.
I mean, and like you said, I'm not complaining. I'm not complaining that she's getting pulled from the tournament. I'm not the biggest proponent of Nikita Lyons. I don't think any of us on the show are. She's just not progressing to the point where I feel like she should be in the particular spot that she's in.
Well, and when you compare her to someone else later on tonight that she's had some matches with, the other person looked much better and much improved compared to Lyons' trajectory. So when we get to talk about Lash Legend, we'll talk about that. But yeah, it's just
for sure. And you know, with Tiffany Stratton, like you said, she's somebody else on the roster that feels like she's a completely polished product. She also has the sex appeal that they're looking for, because that is something NXT is focused on once again.
Mandy Rose's entrance.
Yeah, exactly. You know, so I feel like you're taking, because a lot of people seem to be very thirsty for Nikita Lyons. So I guess kind of replacing her with Tiffany Stratton certainly makes sense from a physically attractive standpoint, I guess. But, you know, as well as, you know, in-ring ability, like you said, I think Tiffany Stratton versus Roxanne Perez, Roxy, that's probably going to be the best possible outcome for this bracket. You know, seeing Nikita Lyons versus Roxy, I'd be into it just because I want to see Roxy and I kind of hope she was going to win. But I'm actually looking forward to Stratton versus Roxy more so than I would have been Nikita Lyons versus Roxy. Stratton rather. She's somebody that at first I was not super high on. I really didn't see it. And as the weeks go on, I'm more and more impressed with her. And I really feel like she has, she's got a really big upside in this business. So
Tom and I were high on her from the start and she's slowly grown on you and Kelly. And, you know, I think her progression in ring has really been what's helped sell, because her character was down from the beginning. Like solid presentation. She embodies her character, but her in-ring work has really, really improved. And I think that is what's helping in terms of looking at her as a legitimate threat, because let's face it, the winner of this tournament is probably going to face Mandy. I don't think they're going to put the title on Mandy too. They're probably going to face Mandy Rose.
I'd
much rather see Perez or Stratton versus Mandy Rose than Lyons versus Mandy Rose. So,
oh yeah, absolutely. You know, and I feel like Lyons versus Mandy Rose, if Mandy Rose continues to hold the title for, you know, any sort of length of time, I feel like that match is just inevitable. Because of the trajectory of Lyons or whatever, but the longer we can kind of push it out, the better, because it's going to give Lyons more time to kind of evolve and come around. You know, I don't want to hate Nikita Lyons. I really don't. I don't want to hate anybody, but her, you know, Nikita Lyons' gimmick, even though she's supposedly living her own life, just kind of dialed up to 11, I really don't feel like she's into it. It doesn't come across as genuine, even though I guess it's technically her. It doesn't come across as genuine, and her in-ring ability is just not there. So hopefully, you know, however many months it is before she winds up in the, you know, the NXT women's title scene, gives her the opportunity to kind of progress and, you know, and become a little bit more polished. So fingers crossed, I guess, for that. But yeah, overall, I don't know. Who do you get your money on, Stratton or Roxy?
I think I'm leaning
Stratton.
Okay. I feel like they're going to want a baby face versus the heel Mandy Rose. So Roxanne Perez is probably going to win, in my opinion, because NXT doesn't necessarily do the heel versus heel match very well.
Yeah,
and
that's true.
Stratton is definitely a heel. Now, if Lyons was still in the tournament, she definitely was going to win as a face against the face Roxanne Perez. But because of Mandy Rose's disposition, Toxic Attraction's disposition, I'm fairly certain that they want to have the heel versus face matchup.
You know, and now, you know, now that because like my original thought was, you know, that the Lyons would have won and faced Mandy Rose. So it would make sense that if Stratton's getting put in her spot, that Stratton wins. But actually, now that you say that, the one thing that I think you might be right, because one thing earlier in the night, Cora Jade and Mandy Rose have had quite, well, Cora Jade and Toxic Attraction in general have been, you know, feuding, and Roxanne Perez and Cora Jade have had some on-screen interactions kind of, you know, showing that they've been friends for years and things like that. So maybe you think you might be right. Cause I think that might've been some foreshadowing tonight with, especially with, like Cora Jade out in the crowd, although that was for a different match. That was for Perez. Never mind.
Well, Electra Lopez, it seems like, which,
yeah,
that match should be that those matches should be,
Lopez,
an adventure.
Not Perez.
Yeah.
Yes.
Well,
yes, it should.
Lopez. Yeah. Cause Lopez lost to, who was it?
Henley.
No,
it was Stratton and Henley. It was, who was it?
Let me check my report because for some reason it is not clicking right now. Because
Alba
was one
Fire.
Of the first...
Alba Fire.
Alba Fire. Right. Right.
Yep.
Who we can get to Alba Fire later, but they're basically setting up Jade versus Lopez. And you know, I'm not a big fan of Jade. I don't like her in-ring work. I don't think it's believable. Lopez is definitely green, which she was better tonight, but you can still see it. So that should be an adventure.
An adventure indeed. An adventure indeed. Ryan, anything else for us tonight?
My final question is on Lash Legend. Has she stirred some people the wrong way as far as executives in NXT? Because I know she didn't get a entrance tonight, and she was pretty much like her presentation was just featured pretty much as like a jobber just being in the ring and they've seen in there already.
So I haven't heard of any heat on Lash Legend backstage. Nothing that I'm familiar with anyway. If I had to guess that, I mean, actually, from what I've heard, not even a guess, from what I have read and heard, you know, they're actually pretty high on Lash Legend. So I don't think there's any heat or anything like that. In terms of like the her not getting an entrance, I mean, that's not anything new in 2.0.
Yep.
You know, there have been quite a few different matches where even just high profile, you know, high profile people like should have had an entrance and they didn't.
I mean, a couple of weeks ago, Roxanne Perez didn't even get an entrance. So
yeah, exactly. You know, I can't really think of any like other examples off the top of my head, but I know it's happened like a billion times at this point. I wouldn't look into it that much. I think it's probably just a matter of timing. And you know, as we said earlier tonight, I mean, they crammed 8 matches into tonight. They also had a bunch of stuff going on backstage and everything.
The barbershop
segment. Sorry, saying that 3 times fast. So I think it was probably just more a matter of timing than any sort of heat. Bruce?
And if you're going to go with the fact that maybe she was jobbed out, well, she got a lot of power offense incident on Roxanne Perez. And, you know, going back to the Lions Legend comparison, Lash Legend tonight to me was her best night in the ring. Her offense looked crisp. Her power moves looked really good. I think she sold as well as she could for Perez. And her angry shock at being pinned with the sunset bomb, which I think Vic called Pop Rock.
I think he did.
Yeah, I think that's the name of her finisher now, which is not a good finisher name. I think Lash Legend tonight showed why they're high on her. Why I've been so high, much higher on her than Lyons, not just because she has that it factor that you can see, she exudes that confidence, but she's steadily been progressing. Aside from that second match with Lyons, which was just terrible, but she is getting better. Yes, having Roxanne Perez in there with you does help, but you also have to make sure that your presentation, your moves, your facial expressions, your psychology also works with your opponent tonight. So for me, I don't look at it as any sort of indictment. I look at them as trying to pack 8 matches in 2 hours and 3 minutes with a bunch of segments in between that they just had to make a call. And, you know, I don't think Yanofe and Blade got a full entrance either. I don't think everyone tonight got a full entrance. So I just think they picked and chose what they wanted to show and when. And I wouldn't, yeah, as Nate said, I wouldn't look too much into this. Now, if she continues to lose quick matches, that might be an indication that they're not as pleased with her progression. But I think this match, the match between Fire and Lopez, they were under 4 minutes each. But I think with the who was in the ring, you have to make them that short, but they also serve their purpose.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I think I would have, with Lash Legend, I kind of want to see her in a longer match just to see if she can do it. Because I think, you know, most of her matches have been relatively short. Granted, that's, you know, probably by design, considering, you know, where she is in her progression, you know, training and all that. But I do agree. I think this is probably her best match to date. I'm sure being in the ring with Roxanne is part of that as well, because she's you know, a great wrestler. But yeah, you know, overall, I don't think, like you said, I wouldn't look into this as any sort of heat. If this continues to happen, and you know, we kind of see her, you know, quickly losing, not getting entrances, and kind of being almost like a jobber, then yeah, sure, maybe there is some heat, or they're not super happy with the way she's progressing. But at least as of right now, anyway, yeah, I think she's still in everybody's good graces anyway. So, Ryan, any follow up, or is that everything you got for us tonight?
I think that's everything tonight. Thanks for taking the call.
Thanks, all right,
Ryan.
Cool. Thank you very much, man. As always, we'll talk to you next time. All right, and we will go back to the phone line. We'll go to the next caller, area code 312. Trying to bring you on here.
Yeah, I'm here.
All right, there we go. All right, so go ahead, state your name, where you're calling from, what you think of the show tonight.
Well, I got here a little bit late. It's Sean from Chicago, but I live in Chico, California. I enjoyed the show. It's always it's really fast paced, and I can kind of see. Did anybody ever see WMAC Masters?
That's my man. Yes,
right.
That is right up my alley.
So that's exactly where NXT 2.0 is going. Here's the crazy part about it. It's not as good as WMAC Masters. So that's a crazy thing to think. So I kind of like that. I kind of finally see where it's going. I understand it. Do you guys like the direction that they're going with the everything being pretty pre-scripted? Everything being such a television production like WMAC Masters versus a live television show or live sports product.
Okay, this whole WMAC Masters, this is an older show, right?
Yes, it was on during our childhood, Nate.
Looking it up right now, and like just by name, it doesn't ring a bell, but like looking at these pictures of people in the set is kind of bringing back.
I watched this
some
every
memories.
Saturday, man. They would have their stage fights in the little arena and everything, and they had storyline built in between where they're talking to each other and they're
it's exactly,
you know, it's kind of like wrestling, but
yeah, it's exactly what NXT 2.0 is trying to be, and I couldn't figure out for the life of me what they were going for, but I don't mind it. Because if you do it right, every segment should hit the way it's supposed to hit. Maybe not as strong, but like the comedy segments, the serious segments, it's all a production. It's a little soap opera-ish, but
Well, not just that.
I love WMAC Masters. That's why I brought it up. But do you like that overly produced atmosphere if it works?
I think you have to do it 2.0 right now because of how many people are so inexperienced in terms of being on live TV, having to cut promos on live TV in front of a live audience, as opposed to doing it in smaller venues that might not have TV deals. That a lot of these people in NXT right now, this is really their first big major TV opportunity, right? Even those on NXT UK, they weren't as seen as much. And so I think you kind of have to do, and even if we look at Raw and SmackDown, it's kind of the same thing. You know, it's very scripted. Everything has a place and a purpose. The camera cuts, the angles, everything is pretty much scripted. There's not as much randomness to everything. But like you said, if it's done well, like tonight's episode, as opposed to, you know, several weeks in the past, then there's no, it doesn't seem as put on as maybe some of the worst episodes will come off as.
Man, I'm watching WMAC Masters now. This is pretty cool.
I'm telling you, dog, man, I used to watch that every week. Yeah.
The black dude. Was
I'm surprised. I'm surprised I missed this. I'm sorry, Sean. Go ahead.
The black guy was the Green Ranger in the Power Rangers show.
Okay. All right.
Well, and for me growing up, it was one of the few TV shows where I actually saw Asian American people on there and they weren't stereotypes.
Yeah, for sure. No, and it's funny you say Power Rangers because like that, I'm just like, I just pulled up a random YouTube clip and I'm watching some guy in a red jumpsuit to kick some ass here. And I'm just like, wow, this kind of reminds you of like the Power Rangers fighting putties or something like that. As far as like scripted shows and stuff. So I agree with Bruce. I think in terms of NXT 2.0, they've got to do it. They've got to do it this way, especially with it now being developmental again. You've got a lot of people down there that have not had the experience in front of the camera, or even if they had, you know, they don't know how to do it in the WWE style. So I do think that, you know, they do need to have it scripted and stuff down there. Personally, I am not a huge fan of overly scripted wrestling. I'd much rather have somebody go out there and cut a promo and flop and completely just bomb, right? But it was
like Ryback?
Yeah, like Ryback or something, right? But it was their words, right? And because it even though they flopped, it probably is going to feel a little bit more authentic than a scripted promo that's not in their own voice. That's just me personally. I I'd much rather go to like a local indie show and listen to some of these guys cut promos that are, you know, relatively generic, but they come from the heart. They're not something that has been overly scripted. I feel like they're, like, I like a little bit of grit with my wrestling. You know, like we were talking about earlier tonight, I know you joined the show a little bit late, Sean, but I mean, you know, both Bruce and I are almost exactly the same age. We're both 34. And it's like growing up in the Attitude Era, you know, that was very gritty. And that was, you know, a lot of stuff was just on the fly and not much was really scripted in terms of promos and things like that. So that's kind of just what I'm always, you know, I always gravitate towards. Like I listen to, you know, Edge, for example. You know, I know the Judgment Day is not necessarily hitting the mark for everybody. It's not necessarily hitting the mark for me, but I love listening to Edge go out there and cut a promo because they let him kind of just go. He has his bullet points. He's got a hit, sure. But his promos, you can, you know, if they are scripted, he's doing a damn good job of delivering them and making them feel authentic. And I can kind of get behind him a bit more because of that.
Cody Rhodes coming back to WWE.
Cody Rhodes,
same
yeah.
way. In the same, exact same way.
Exactly. Yeah, Cody Rhodes is another one. I always go to The Rock. I mean, Jesus Christ, with The Rock, if he had to be scripted and he had, you know, kind of reins put around him that, you know, everybody else had, I mean, he might not be the biggest man in Hollywood today, you know? So
it's funny
I
said Reigns, considering Roman Reigns also has been given more leeway to kind of just do what he wants to do on the mic.
Exactly. So I don't know. I think there's definitely a time and a place for scripted, and there's reasons that you need to do it. But I do feel that if the talent does show that they have the ability to go out there, cut a good promo on the mic, not fail, and obviously stick to what you want them to stick to and not just, you know, kind of go into business for themselves, I think they should be able to do that too.
Let me just add that when they shifted to 2.0, we knew there were going to be growing pains. Yeah, they made it happen too quickly. But when you retool your roster to the point that you're signing people who really have very little experience or no experience in wrestling, and particularly in WWE where they have their own style compared to what you might see in AEW, Impact, Ring of Honor, Major League Wrestling, New Japan, Stardom, wherever you want to go, it's got to take time. And because of that, you have to get people to feel comfortable. And the way to get them to feel the most comfortable is to have them scripted, because then once they understand how it's supposed to happen, kind of the cadence, what you need to do, how you need to express your words, then you can start pulling the reins back. Now, not everybody needs to do that. You know, Alba Fire is not one of the people that needs to do that. Mandy Rose, I think, has a little more leeway in what she says compared to other people on the show who just think about her tone and the words she says. But most everyone else, like Idris Enofe, Malik Blade, they definitely are scripted, but it works. So,
they're good
for the most part.
They do.
I think
they're the prototype. I think if you want a coachable wrestler that could get stuff done in the ring, looks the part, and has personality, they're the greatest just basic patterns you could follow. Like if they don't make it, kind of don't know what else to do with their WWE product, like, at all.
Let me put it this way.
I
think Idris Enofe is this version of NXT's Montez Ford. Enofe, to me, has all the potential in the world to not just be a tag team star, but when you just watch him, like, his presentation when he does promos, he's comfortable. He exudes confidence. In the ring, he sells extremely well. His offense is believable. I think Enofe is Montez Ford of 2.0.
I would agree with that, like, especially seeing him tonight. Like, he seemed crisp. He seemed like he even seemed a step above Blade. Blade had a little bit of a botch coming off the top turnbuckle. It was a clothesline he was attempting and
he didn't quite make it.
He still made it work.
Yeah.
But Enofe doesn't have those botches. It's a thing.
I want to piggyback off something you said really, really quick with Mandy Rose. I want to ask a question about her. She was on the main roster quite a bit, and we know that raises your stock, and you just get better when you get a lot of reps, regardless of who you are. You just get better, you know, even if you're the worst. Not saying she was, but how much did she really need NXT? In terms of, I think she's at her best now. I think I think it's fine what they're doing with her. I don't mind her being champ and all that, representing the branch. I think she's a transitional champ, but a good one. But how much?
A long transitional
actually,
champ.
No, I think she's just there to hold the title till they see who can really
who
get the
up.
Job done. Like, yeah, you know, like maybe Roxanne. I think maybe it'd be her, but, like, I think they want people to, I hate to say this, reach for that brass ring, but that's what they're doing. And I think Mandy Rose is a good placeholder because she kind of is what they're looking – not kind of, she is. But that's my point. My question is the value of Mandy Rose. Like, did she really need NXT, and how valuable is she going for?
She needs NXT.
Yeah, she does. I mean, I feel like, you know, main roster Mandy Rose was hit or miss. I am a little bit higher on Mandy Rose than I think some people are, like Kelly, for example. you know, I don't think she's the greatest wrestler, in the world by any stretch of the imagination, especially being on the main roster. But I don't think, she was absolutely horrible either. But bringing her down to NXT, she's that big fish in the little pond. She does feel and has felt like a big deal since she got down there because of that main roster rub. But, you know, it's funny that you say you're a transitional champion, because I really didn't think about it as like a transitional champion either, even though I've kind of felt like she has been that placeholder for whoever is going to be next. You know, they haven't really, with the exception of people like Io Shirai and, you know, Kaylee Ray and or Alba Fire, you know, and a couple other people. I was going to say Dakota Kai, but she's gone. You know, there really aren't many women in that division that I feel like are main roster ready, not main roster ready, main event ready, rather, to be the champion. So bringing her down there and making her the champ not only helped out the brand, but I think it definitely helped out Mandy Rose. You're looking at her tonight, again, not the best wrestler in the world, but she's not bad. Yeah, I feel like this is the match she had against Indy Hartwell tonight. They didn't have the greatest chemistry in the world. I noticed a couple, you know, maybe mistimed spots or botches, whatever you want to call it. I don't think they had the greatest chemistry in the world. Yeah,
I never liked Indy Hartwell.
I like Indy, but I don't like Indy in the ring. I feel like every time she gets in the ring, she disappoints me just a little bit. And I hate saying that because I really like her character.
I think Indy just doesn't know how to use her long body yet in the ring. Her and Duke Hudson to me have the same issues. They're very lanky, and they kind of just need to learn how to use that better.
Yeah. Well, and I also think, too, that she's
–
Oh, sorry, go ahead.
I'm sorry. No, I'm sorry. You go ahead. I'm sorry.
All I was going to say was I think that she's also so used to being a tag team wrestler. You know, ever since she's been in the spotlight, you know, she's part of the way, or she was with Persia. So I think now she's trying to find her way as a single star without, you know, having that safety net of having a partner.
Well, let me say this about Mandy Rose too. Like, aside from tonight, so they got about 10 minutes. They got almost 10 minutes tonight. So they do have some trust in both her and Indy Hartwell to go 10 minutes. And yes, there was a commercial break in between that split it up. But if you think about some of her previous matches, like the one with Dakota Kai, I mean, that was a terrible match, and that was like a month ago. So Mandy Rose needs NXT because she is not polished. She is still not improved enough to carry a match or be in a legitimate 10-minute match on the main roster. And the fact that it's been – she came – so the shift to 2.0 happened right after Halloween Havoc, right? Or before Halloween Havoc, what, something around there?
Yeah,
so,
something like that, yeah.
The fact that it's been like, what, 6-8 months, and she's still kind of the same Mandy Rose she was in, you know, on Raw and SmackDown, that doesn't say a lot about how she's improving. And again, you know, the match with Kai, there's another match I can't remember right now that she didn't do so well in right before that. She needs more polish before she goes back to Raw or SmackDown if they call her up as a singles wrestler. Now, I believe that Toxic Attraction will be called up or called to Raw or SmackDown as a group, as a faction, which will help cover all three of their weaknesses better. In their little Toxic Lounge segment where they interrupted Wade Barrett before the main event, Mandy Rose, she's a good promo. I'll give her that much. She's fine there. JCJ, not so much. But Gigi Dolin really did well with her words. And so I think what their plan is to call all three of them up because they all have some deficiencies that will be exposed too much if they're called up as singles wrestlers.
All right, Sean, I know you had something you were trying to say there. So any follow-up?
No, that was pretty much what I was asking. Like, cause I see her going, she's not going to stay there forever. They have to do something with her. And she is transitional. Yep. I think it was more so to just kind of – everybody got what they wanted, though. She got top billing on a show. This is kind of where I
title
always
run.
Saw Mandy Rose. You know, like, it's kind of weird because, like, I saw Mandy Rose. I was like, yeah, okay, this is who she's supposed to be. This is the best she'll be. But, you know, I don't know what she'll do on the main roster. I was going to ask if Wendy Chu – could possibly be a transitional champion. I'm not going to ask that.
I hope not.
I don't want to waste your time. I actually like her. I think she pulls off a
the character.
She's kind of like Damian Sandow.
Yeah. The character shouldn't be, but the in-ring skill should be, if that makes sense.
Yeah, exactly. I'm not a fan of the character. I'm not a fan of the character whatsoever, but as a wrestler, like, you know, Karen Q, I'm
she's
I'm
one of
a
the
fan.
Best in NXT.
Oh, hands down. Absolutely hands down. I just, she's hindered by that gimmick.
Mm-hmm.
I can't actually believe she's going to be in an NXT women's title match. I can't even believe she's there.
Not to mention her line about hitting Wendy in the face with her sack of balls tonight.
Yeah, my balls. That was hilarious.
I thought that was pretty cool that they got that in there. Like, see, we get him all this flack for being PG, and then they say something like that, and it's like, that was corny. Now, I think it's pretty funny.
Yeah,
I think credit is due.
I said it in our four-way Twitter DM chat thing. I'm like, that's the line of the night, my balls. I thought it was great. You know, the character Wendy Chu is kind of growing on me, and I hate saying that.
Yes.
I really do.
Yes.
But it's
no,
kind of growing
embrace
on me. I guess I have to. But it is growing on me. I don't want to see her be NXT Women's Champion. I don't feel like that adds any credibility to that title. That title is one of the most, at least it was one of the most protected titles in all of WWE. And I kind of hope they get back to that. I don't want to see somebody, you know, like or a character like Wendy Chu, at least in this current incarnation of Wendy Chu, actually hold that title. I feel like that's kind of a, I don't want to use the word disgrace to the title, but that's kind of, I guess, the word I'm going to use. But yeah.
Well, if you're talking about the protection of that title, the protection of the women's championship, right, in NXT, the two most popular women in all of WWE right now, Becky Lynch and Bianca Belair, never won the NXT Women's Championship.
That's true.
That's how protected the championship was.
Yeah. So
I don't think it's, I know what you mean. The gimmick kind of messes up. It takes away from the prestige of the title, but the person doesn't. So it's easy to argue against it in terms of gimmick. But it's hard to argue against
who would actually
be having the title.
Yeah.
Would you have been okay with No Way Jose being NXT champion?
Yeah,
no.
But I'm weird. I'm a weirdo.
Okay. I guess that's why Wendy Chu works for you. But
yeah,
I'll accept
that answer. With No Way Jose. I like the guy. I mean, I really did.
Okay, well, Adam Rose. Like, I mean, any of these characters, it there's a certain level to them, even though WWE, all professional wrestling has their space for comedy wrestlers. I love Toru Yano, right? But Toru Yano is never going to become IWGP champion. Let's put it that way, all right?
Mm-hmm.
So there's a whole sort of reconceptualization of what it means to be top champion. I don't think a Wendy Chu or a No Way Jose or an R-Truth should be the top champion.
Well, let's back up with R-Truth.
R-Truth should have been champion, at least if it was for a month, because Big Show should have been champion for longer, too. They did him wrong, but R-Truth should have got that championship. He should have had that championship for 1 month. We're talking about a month.
But this character of
R-Truth,
this 24/7 R-Truth should not be champion, is what I'm saying.
No. I mean, if R-Truth turned around and beat Roman Reigns tomorrow, I'd be pretty happy about it. I'm not going to lie.
I mean, I think we'd all pop, yeah. But...
yeah, you know. God, R-Truth is a national treasure.
Mm-hmm. So, okay,
quick.
I'm just
getting ready.
With women's, I'm just keeping it on women's wrestling. I've been a longtime fan of having a women's champion that could go from show to show. Somebody who could do what RVD did with that TV title and actually have it, the television title, be the actual open challenge, like a real open challenge. WWE has destroyed open challenges for me. Like, all of them are stupid and fake and garbage. But a television title, a title you would have to defend on TV at least once a week, sounds great. You could take that workhorse champion and put them on any show you ever wanted to, and that could easily be someone who could be your top star whenever you felt like it, because they've got the exposure, they're not overexposed, yet they're champion. Like a Miz. You know, that's what he was doing with the mid-card title. So my question to you guys is, could you do that in the women's division? And who would you take to do that with if you were to do that?
Now, are you talking about adding a women's TV title, or are you talking doing that with the women's championship?
No, a European title, like just a secondary title
okay.
for the women. For someone like The Miz, like, I don't know, whoever the female Miz is, there isn't one. That's the horrible part about it. Maybe Mandy Rose is. I don't know. But someone who could show
closest
up to
I
your
think
television.
Closest I can think of is, like,
Natty. Yeah. Yeah, a workhorse champion who could put in the work, has the skills, has the look, and could bring other people up with her as she faces them, like what Cena did with the United States
US title. Yeah,
the open show.
So, I don't know. Like, part of me is like, hell yeah, I'd love to see something like that. There's also part of me that goes, I really don't want to see them add another title, especially with the depth of the women's roster right now in NXT.
AEW
is not
like
super...
20 titles. AEW
yeah, no,
like
I know.
20.
AEW
yeah.
has about 20 titles right now, too. New Japan has like 45 titles.
Yeah. I was telling Todd Todd Martin, and he was like, no, it's not like that. I was like, bro, they got a title that's not even a real title on somebody's waist right now.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, I was telling him, I was like, look, they out of control with the titles, and you're talking about WWE not having them. They have some different brands where they don't really cross them. I don't want to talk about that, but you get what I'm saying. They had the legitimacy for their titles, just like NXT did. But go ahead, sorry.
It's interesting you bring this up, because when AEW introduced the TNT Championship, I went on record, I think in an article I said, what they should do is, because it's on TNT, and the show at the time was on TNT, is they should have a title match 1 week, the next week have a number one contenders match, and then you have every other week a title match, number one contender match, title match, number one contender match for that title. I think doing one every week would become you would start dwindling the depth of your roster too quickly, but having every other week with a contenders match is, I think, the path they should have gone. If you do that with a women's television title at NXT. So I have a con and a pro. I think the con is that the depth right now isn't where you'd want it to be to have something like that. The pro is that the depth isn't there that you want it to be, which means you could have them have these showcase matches, get them experience. And I think the person you'd want to do that with, who's in 2.0 right now, is Roxanne Perez. She's the one, or Tiffany Stratton, one of the two. They're the ones who are the most polished in the ring right now in terms of the 2.0 class. They could do it. But again, it depends on how – so these open challenge matches too, they just can't be 3 or 4 minute matches. You have to put some time into it, unless it's someone like Cena facing Zack Ryder or something. Like that doesn't have to be more than a minute, right? But for the purposes of the division, if you do something like this, you have to make sure those matches go longer than at least 5 minutes. So it'd be either what's going to happen is the lack of depth will be exposed, or the lack of depth will be improved because they're getting reps, constant reps and ring time with these title matches and high stakes matches. So I think there is a way you could do it. I don't think it will happen. I think NXT already has enough issues with the titles they have on the show that they can't even get everyone on all the time. So I understand the sentiment. I wouldn't mind seeing it, especially if they had some kind of tournament. Like maybe if the women's breakout tournament led to becoming crowned a television champion, that would have been fine. And having a Perez or Stratton be the title holder and have the open challenge every other week, or Stratton being forced into it as the heel, I think that would be fine. But with NXT where it is right now, with the women on the roster right now, and again, with the inability for NXT to focus on as many titles as they need to, especially the top titles, I just don't know if it's feasible. Maybe in a year, maybe at the end of the year, who knows? But right now, I don't think that it's a route they should go down.
Yeah, I'm pretty much in agreement with you there. Sean, anything else, or shall we move on?
Two more things, kind of. Just the one more. With the mid-card title, would you make a new one or would you bring it back? That's one question. And then what is – and this kind of ties in what I kind of a last question. You got Nikki Cross, Doudrop. You got Alba Fire on NXT, which who can easily come up and probably will really soon. I think that's why they actually changed their gimmick. I think that them making a faction with Becky Lynch would be pretty cool. and maybe have them, do what they need to do, and then you can kind of get the four horsewomen or something like
that. Why would you put three Scottish women with one Irish woman? That doesn't make sense.
Look. I know it doesn't make total sense. I know it don't, but I kind of like that beef. I kind of like
us dumb Americans.
Yeah,
us dumb Americans are like, oh, they're all European. It's fine.
No. I like the inner
mentality.
Beef. I would end up breaking Alba Fire off. I would break Alba Fire off at some point. I would kind of like, I don't know, like an evolution or something like that. You know, I don't know who would be the young person in there, who would be the Randy Orton, but I don't know. I was just kind of playing around with you know, in my head canon and stuff like that, fantasy booking it. But mostly it was to get to back to the mid-card champion. And maybe if you put it on, you got a new title, you wanted to have prestige, you put it on Becky Lynch. You had Becky Lynch go from show to show, you know, pretty much wrestling any and everybody. You know, Tiffany Stratton, Roxanne, and Cora Jade, unfortunately. Or maybe fortunately, who knows? Maybe she'll make her and prove that she can actually do something. But what do you think about taking someone that, and I know it's Becky Lynch, but someone that high-powered, someone with that much ability and fame, and putting a new title on them and having them go from brand to brand, still kind of having Becky Lynch be the face of things without having her be the top person with the top championship, and still kind of with that faction bringing along other people and making them as well.
I like the idea of a female evolution. That does my interest.
I like that. My thing is, I just don't know if I trust WWE to book it properly, you know, because like I like the idea. I do like the idea, especially of like a women's faction like Evolution. You know, I mean, WWE seems to be going a little heavy on factions, especially in NXT. But you also have like Judgment Day and stuff, you know, on the main roster. I would not.
AEW is pretty much 90% factions, and they're doing just fine.
I'm not saying it's a bad thing. I'm not saying it's a bad thing at all.
Okay.
You know, I mean, hell, like I said earlier, we grew up in the Attitude Era where the faction warfare was like, you know, Nation of Domination. You had
Mean Street Posse.
Yeah, exactly. The gang war
with Savio Vega.
Yeah, exactly. I was trying to think of that. Los Barricos, that was it. I'm actually a proponent of factions. I feel like, you know, you get a few factions going, not everybody being in a faction like NWO or something like that, but you get a few different factions going and storylines. It's just easy storylines that people can get invested in and things like that. So I'm cool with that. The mid-card champion, I'm totally cool with it. I think it should be somebody higher up on the card, like a Becky Lynch, Bianca Belair, something like that, to give that belt some prestige, as well as, you know, to kind of give a little bit, you know, more star power to every show that they show up on. The only thing that I don't like about it is it kind of flies in the face of the brand split. Granted, I know, you know, the women's WWE tag team titles, you know, those titles have kind of, you know, those bounce around, and you know, so does Roman and the Usos now too. But, you know, at least everybody else, they're stuck on the brands. So well, I don't
that's
know.
Why you make it a television title, because it has to be defended on television every week, just once a week. And it's three shows. So that lessens, it's still once a week where you see it defended or whatever. Of course, a heel champion that make it
but
to where you, they cheat, but you know, where they don't defend it every week. But the point would be, since it's three brands across three brands, if it's only defended once, you think, ah, you know, it's not really being defended that much, when in actuality it actually is being defended every single week, or theoretically. So that's why you make it the television title.
All right. I mean, I don't hate it. I don't hate it. Let's say that. I don't hate it. There's like, for some reason, I still have a couple reservations about it. Mostly, I think it's because, like, if you're going to do it for the women, I feel like you probably need to do it for the men, too.
They have a mid-card title already, though.
Yeah, but not something that gets defended on all three shows.
Mm-hmm.
You know, So maybe, you know, if they were to take, you know, one or maybe make all of the mid-card title, I don't know. I don't know how you'd work it. But let's put it this way. Like I said, I don't hate it. I really don't. I think it would be kind of a cool idea to have, you know, somebody with some star power to show up on, you know, maybe show up in NXT every once in a while, you know, defend a title. Certainly put some eyeballs on it and make things feel a little bit bigger if booked correctly. So yeah, you know, I'm like thumbs in the middle, kind of leaning higher, high, you know, kind of leaning up on the idea. But yeah, you know, not bad. All right, is there anything else you got for us, Sean, or should we hit the mailbag and head to the hills?
You guys hit the mailbag. I'm long winded. I got a lot, but you know, I don't want to keep you here all night.
Hey, no worries, man. No worries. We appreciate it. Feel free to call in anytime, man. Call in anytime. All right. So with that, let's go move on because we do have a bunch of segments we haven't hit yet. Probably won't get to everything tonight. Actually, we definitely won't get to everything tonight unless we want to be here for like another hour or two. So let's at least hit the mailbag and see what else we can hit. So we'll start. Let's actually start from an email we got earlier in the week from David Podnar. Hello, everybody. Just wanted to add a little bit of background to Nikita Knight. And Nikita Knight is the former name of Thea Hale, who is the high schooler that they just picked up. He just wanted to add a little bit of background to Thea Hale. She's a local Pittsburgh wrestler and has been working with the Pittsburgh-based promotion Rise Wrestling and was trained by them. I'm friends with people knowledgeable about the local scene, and the Rise trainers are veterans who train up a person like Nikita correctly. I'm also glad that WWE is letting her go to college. Also, for the show release the week of the 16th, bleep, 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 and finally bleep. There was a lot of bleeps on that show last week, wasn't there? He says, have a great week and stay safe. So just you know, basically no questions there, just a couple quick little tidbits about Thea Hale, which is, I think, kind of cool. Definitely kind of cool. Answer.
What do you think about them working in the angle of her being allowed to attend college while being in NXT?
I personally like it. So I talked about this a little bit last week. You know, I think, like, I'm not super over the moon about them picking up talent straight out of high school unless they're, like, a, you know, once in a blue moon type of a talent. You know, my example was Rene Dupree. You know, he was 18 when he got picked up, you know, by WWE, and he didn't have the maturity level to make it in WWE. He was his own worst enemy. I feel like at 18 years old, I was more mature than most people, you know, most people in my high school. And even then, I don't think I would have been mature enough to be in a business like WWE and having to advocate for myself and things like that. I feel like even you're just between the age of 18 and 21, there's a big maturity level increase. You know, you end up becoming a little bit more mature. Well, some people anyway.
Yeah, I don't think it hit me fully until I was about 24.
Yeah, you know.
25.
And even then, you know, it's probably your mid-20s, something like that. So I'm okay with it, with them doing it here and there. But I like the fact that they're bringing up the college thing because it kind of gives me that and it's kind of stupid to say this, but it gives me that peace of mind that they're not just taking talent straight out of high school and then forcing them to not go to college. I guess not forcing is not the right word, but you know what I mean? Like saying, okay, hey, here's a full-time contract and whatever, you know, go nuts. I wrestling is not a business that you really can, I don't want to say you really can count on because you never know what's going to happen. I mean, the wrong, you go out for just a routine match and you walk out paralyzed, you know, looking at like draws or something like that, you know? So, you know, you want
or
to have a backup plan.
Or Misawa dying in the ring.
Yeah, exactly. You know, or hell, you know, most recently, like Big E, you know, getting dropped on his head. You know, so you never know what can happen. So you always do want that backup plan. And I'm glad that they're bringing up the fact that they're allowing her to go to college, because to me, it tells me that, you know, not only are they invested in her, but they're invested in their talent and, you know, they're looking out for their best interests. So, So yeah, that's kind of at least my two cents on it anyway.
Yeah, I honestly haven't developed an opinion yet, because this is really the first time I can remember in any wrestling promotion where, at least the major promotions, where this is a part of the story of the character coming into the show.
Yeah, yeah, same. I don't really think of another time they've, you know, in any promotion that they've done that. So yeah, for sure. All right, let's go over to another email here from our good friend Kevin Catani. Salutations, gents. I hope this email finds you well. What a week of NXT. I'm liking their mainline story developments, and it seems like the crowd was responding well in many cases. I missed last week while I was on the phone putting my final touches on our girls' first Disney vacation. That said, I'm not sure if you've made guesses on this yet, but who do you think Gacy's druids are? I imagine we'll get the reveal at In Your House, but now that we're closer, are you any more or less sure of your predictions? Next, what do you make of Tiffany Stratton's backing into the breakout final? Lastly, this will be the PLE that either Mandy or GJ Jason both lose their titles. Thanks as always. Go VIP and listen to 8 years back. Office hours are now over. And I guess it's a good time to plug NXT 8 years back, Kelly and Tom's VIP show, where they talk about NXT 8 years to the day.
Look how nice you're being to Kelly.
I know. I what the hell am I doing? Bruce, reach through the internet and slap me when I do something like that. For Christ's sake, man. God. All right. So, yeah, so I do like a lot of the main story developments right now. The Joe Gacy and Bron Breakker stuff, maybe a little bit less so, because I feel it's like just a little janky or whatever. We talked about it a little bit earlier tonight. But for the most part, I'm on board with it. As far as Gacy's druids, we still really don't know who they are. I don't really have any major guesses. Kelly and I talked about it last week. We kind of think that it's probably different people under the hood right now, under the hood, just whoever is available or whatever. And then, yeah, they may have an idea of, like who it might be. Like we were talking last week with Black Scorpion, WCW, you know, they did had no idea who it was going to be. And then, you know, eventually it was like, okay, Ric Flair, put on the mask and go out and reveal yourself as Black Scorpion. I kind of have a feeling it might be something like that. They either have somebody in mind or they don't. And I know it sounds like a bit of a cop-out answer, but for right now, like, I kind of lean in the way that they're just faceless, menacing bodies to stand behind Joe Gacy, you know, in the absence of Harland. If they do wind up giving them identities and having some sort of reveal as to who these people are, I personally think it was probably a later decision, or decisions they made later on than, you know, when the druids first debuted, you know, like they actually had an idea of what was going on. I feel like the druids were kind of an afterthought in the sense that they no longer had Harland and they wanted some dark menacing figures standing behind, Joe Gacy. So that's kind of where I'm at with it. I think if they do any sort of a reveal, I don't know who it's going to be, but B, I think it's probably some sort of a last minute decision, or at least a decision that's happened, at some point weeks after the Druids debuted. And then with Tiffany Stratton in the breakout final, we talked a lot about that earlier. And I don't think that Mandy is going to lose her title to Wendy Chu. I really don't at In Your House. JC and Gigi perhaps maybe losing their titles to like Casey and Caden, or Katana and Caden.
Katana.
That's never going to sit well with me. they might end up losing the titles to them there. However, there are, like I said earlier tonight, there are kind of rumblings of potentially seeing them getting called up, Katana and Caden getting called up to the main roster for this tag team title tournament where Sasha and Naomi had to relinquish the titles. I guess they didn't have
they
to.
They
relinquished the titles themselves just by walking out. Rightfully so. The tag team roster depth of the main roster for women is like non-existent. So it would not surprise me if we saw, it really wouldn't surprise me if we saw Caden and Katana win the tag team titles and then saw Gigi and JC go up. However, if they were to do that, I would think Mandy would also get called up as well. And I really don't want to see them do that with her holding the women's title. And I really don't want to see Wendy Chu win it off of Mandy. I don't think, as we talked about earlier tonight, I don't think that's the best way to go. So long story short, I don't think this is the match, or this is going to be the PLE where we see Toxic Attraction lose all of their gold. Kevin, or not Kevin, you're Bruce. Bruce, on Kevin's
the
email.
The other PhD. I'm the other
right.
PhD.
Yes.
What was your the first question he asked?
So he says the first question was about Gacy, if we know who his druids are.
Right. So let's not forget that when the druids first appeared, there were about seven of them. when he pushed Breaker off the little concourse thing, and they dwindled it down to two. Now, unless they just try and do a complete mind F, they've shown that they've had white hands, so we know they're going to be white dudes. However, we don't know which white dudes they're going to be. And I still can't tell the difference between Channing Lorenzo and Troy Donovan, Stacks and Two Dimes. So, you know, hopefully they have a little more of a look.
Are you saying we all look alike?
Yes, I'm saying you all look alike. You all look alike.
Fair enough. You know what? I'll take that. If I can look exactly like Ashton Kutcher, then I'm good with that.
You know, Chappelle has his issues now, but back in the day, one of his things was all white people look alike to me. So let's put it that way. Again, I'm more intrigued at who the identity of these druids are than the actual feud between Breaker and Gacy. So there's that. When it comes to we talked about Strand, but when it comes to the tag teams, because Carter and Chance are going to be called up before Toxic Attraction, which leads me to believe they're going to be a part of this tournament. And I will say this much about Katana Chance. Ever since she's made the change in her name, whether it was by her own volition or something that was worked mutually upon with the writing staff, or the writing staff told her to change her name, she has done a better job of embodying what this means to her and not being so much of Casey Catanzaro. So in that regard, I say good for her. And it's starting to work because, you know, their promo backstage, they showed more fire, more intensity, Kate and Carter especially, but Katana Chance didn't have that whole bubbly smiling, I'm just happy to be here, look to her anymore. She had something that you could actually legitimately look at as a legitimate professional wrestler. And to me, while I do think a lot of their offense in the ring is still too fast-paced and doesn't give you enough time to breathe, they're, to me, more polished in the ring as a team than Dolan and Jane. So by that factor alone, I believe that they'll be called up, which means that next week I still think Toxic Attraction holds all the titles for next Saturday, because I don't think Wendy Chu is taking the title off of Rose. And again, the whole... because of our assumption that Toxic Attraction will be moved to Raw or SmackDown as a faction, you can't just have one win and the other two lose. Unless they have something like when Kevin Owens first came up during John Cena's Open Challenge as the NXT champion. Don't see that happening because of Mandy Rose's history on Raw and SmackDown. If it was Alba Fire, if it was Io Shirai, who is still absent wherever the hell she is in WWE, even if it was like a Roxanne Perez, I could see them being a sole person to move with the title and do something like that. But I have to believe that with how everything is shaping out and with the trajectories of the stories and the trajectories of the acts, that Carter and Chance will be the ones to move into the tournament while Toxic Attraction stays to anchor NXT's women's division.
Yeah, that sounds like it's probably the most likely scenario. Something I wanted to say on the name changes, So I think a lot. So as far as I'm aware, a lot of the name changes, like, you know, Katana Chance, Alba Fire, and heck, I didn't realize Raul Mendoza has a new name, Cruz del Toro.
Portal. Yeah,
like that must have been one of the weeks that I was off the show, because like I do not remember that at all until
Kelly
just now.
Kelly reminded me, but my report still said Raul Mendoza 1 week.
Yeah. Like, I had no idea until just this minute when I was kind of doing a little research as you were talking here. But, it's, you know, essentially WWE just doesn't want anybody using names that they used in the indies or outside the company or real names. So I think that's kind of why we're seeing a lot of these – or that is why we're seeing, you know, Walter de Gunther,
Ludwig Kaiser.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So I think that's kind of why we're seeing a lot of that. I don't necessarily think it's anything developing with those individual characters, although it is a good time to kind of reinvigorate those characters. You know, as we can see, like Alba Fire is probably the biggest one, you know, biggest
and
change.
Her presentation has been fantastic. Her hair, her makeup, her attire, her aside from her senton, everything about Alba Fire is just amazing. Like, to think that the Kaylee Ray that was wearing your standard kind of woman's wrestling gear morphing into this, she seems like a better fit for Judgment Day than Rhea Ripley does.
Yeah, you're damn right. You're absolutely right. It's actually almost, it's kind of funny to think it's the same person. You know,
that speaks to her talent.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I think as far as the rebrands for everybody goes, I think Alba Fire is hands down the best one so far. So, but yeah, that's really all I wanted to add to that. So that was the mailbag. So we still have quite a bit that we haven't talked about tonight, but like I said, I don't necessarily want to talk about everything because I'm not in Hawaii. I want to go to bed at a relatively, you know, decent hour tonight.
Can we talk about Wesley at least?
That's actually where I was going to go, Wesley versus Sanga. So we had Wesley, like I just said, Wesley versus Sanga in, I think it was our second match of the night. Sanga won in 3 minutes and 51 seconds. This was actually an interesting match. So I kind of dug it. This was the first time that Sanga has actually come across as a bit of a threat to anybody, really. When Sanga was with Grayson Waller as his bodyguard, he was literally the least ineffective bodyguard in the history of WWE. He never stopped anybody from doing anything to Grayson Waller. He would try to interject himself in an attack or something, and he'd just wind up like staring at the lights himself. Tonight, he actually came across as a bit of a monster. You know, he still is wearing Braun Strowman's hand-me-downs in
yep.
terms of gear, you know, which is, you know, whatever. But he does. He came across as kind of a monster badass tonight, and I really dug it. Wes Lee, you know, showed a lot of heart out there tonight. You know, but
he sold like hell on that chokeslam.
Oh my! Matter of fact,
looked like Spike Dudley.
In my hits and misses, I said that that's one of the best choke slams that I've seen mm-hmm. since Sean Waltman took one from Kane.
It reminds me of Spike Dudley getting drilled by Kane too. Just
yeah.
how he folded him up.
Yeah. It just Spike wasn't where I immediately went. It was X-Pac. But yeah, now that you say Spike, absolutely. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. That was a monster choke slam. And it, mm-hmm. the choke slam is probably one of my favorite moves in
yep.
wrestling. And the fact that, like, you know, Undertaker and Kane are no longer and Big Show's gone, like, nobody – I mean, people use it here and there, but, like –
Well, Corbin does the choke breaker.
Yeah,
so
that
really
but that's
a choke
not
slam.
Choke
yeah.
slam. But,
yeah.
you know, and I know a lot of people kind of, you know, they don't want to use that because it's synonymous with Taker and Kane at this mm-hmm. point. But, God, I love that move, and I'm glad mm-hmm. to see somebody actually hit it and make it look – devastating. So yeah, like overall, I thought this was great. Wes Lee, he, you know, like I said, he showed a lot of heart here tonight in and out of the ring, you know, in wanting to kind of take on Sanga and prove that he can, you know, take on this beast. Unfortunately, he wasn't able to overcome it, but the fact that he had, you know, the ribs taped up and there was a story from him getting, you know, his ass kicked from Von Wagner last week, you know, kind of made it so his loss wasn't necessarily a clean loss. So I think, you know, it's not necessarily a bad thing for him, but yeah, what did you think of this and a bag of chips? I don't know why a bag of chips, but whatever.
So I really want to talk about Wes Lee because of his promo before the match with Mackenzie Mitchell.
Yeah.
And, there are a couple of things that I want to point out from this promo. One, if you think about Wesley's first promo, after he came back, not the vignette, but when he came back and he was talking to Mackenzie Mitchell about, I've been lost, you know, I need to find myself. And then the whole thing with Zion Quinn, he said, I might get my ass whooped, but I'm going to go out there and I'm going to give it to you. And we're seeing this consistently with Wes Lee. He's taking on bigger men, but he's not afraid to take on the challenge, even though he knows he's going to get his ass whooped. That's, and that to me, being a through line with regarding him, is great because I said too that if for me, I would keep having Wesley lose matches until he finally finds that something different that makes singles wrestling apart from tag team wrestling. And once he finds that, then he starts winning it again. And now you have your path for your single star to become a champion. I don't know if his losing streak needs to be as long as MVP's or if it's 6 months or 3 months, but I think they're doing the right thing right now in terms of getting the MSK sort of, not stink, but the MSK aura off of him, which is good because we've all talked about how MSK was just too over the top, too goofy, not really grounded. But this Wesley is relatable, grounded in reality. He's not, even though he's like, yeah, I'm losing, but he's still realistic about what he's doing and how he's going about things. Because for him, as he told Mackenzie Mitchell, she said, you know, I don't think he meant any disrespect. And he said, with all due respect to you, Mackenzie, I don't think you understand. And, you know, that hits even harder because he's a black man and she's a white woman, right? So there's layers to what he's talking about that go beyond just the wrestling aspect, right? And I thought that was really, really well done because he made the point without beating you over the head about that point, okay? Now, in the match, again, he didn't shy away. He got offense. He went right after Sangha, although I thought it was a little weird. He tried to do some cat scan wrestling in the beginning, but he went with quick fluid strikes after, and he really, really used his environment to help him. It just wasn't enough. And then the post-match thing with Zion Quinn coming in and Sangha coming to Wesley's aid. I hope it's not something where they put him into a tag team with Sangha, because I think both actually – Sangha's improvement in the ring, considering where he was just a few months ago as the bodyguard, is remarkable. When you look at the match tonight now, Wesley being his opponent probably has something to do with that. But again, like I said earlier, you still have to have – like I said with Last Legend, you still have to be able to believably sell your character, your offense, et cetera. And I think Sangha did a good job with that tonight. The whole Zion Quinn thing, I noted that he walked in with his vampire chic glasses and leather jacket and everything, right? Kind of reminds me of the Blade movies with Wesley Snipes. And I just can't buy Zion Quinn. And, you know, his promos make no sense. Even Wesley pointed like, dude, what does that even mean, right? So I hope that maybe Zion Quinn becomes that person that Wesley finds what he needs to do as a singles wrestler to then overcome even the Giants, right? Rey Mysterio had those storylines all the time where he would lose and lose and lose, but when it came down to the matches that had big stakes on them, whether they're championship matches or whether they're number one contenders matches or whatnot, that he would find a way at times to beat them. And I think they could do that here with Wesley.
Heck, they did it last night with Rey Mysterio and Veer Mahan.
Dominic. Yeah, yeah, exactly, exactly.
Yeah.
So for me, I was really, you know, I talked earlier about Enofe being Montez Ford. To me, Wesley could be like your Sami Zayn of NXT if they do it right with getting the crowd behind him with this. Because let's remember, the reason why Sami Zayn was so popular in NXT wasn't just because of his ring work. It was the journey. It was the journey we went on when he was so close so many times and losing and then finally getting it only for his best friend to turn on him right at the very same moment he won the title, right? So the journey, I think, is where they could go with Wesley to make him into that babyface. Now, there is that portion of the crowd that still boos him because Izzy's dad is a jackass, right? He's whatever. But I think with what they're doing with him and – you can't look at those promos and listen to them and think that they're bad or think that they're doing something wrong because they're making him, like I said, I keep coming back to this, but they're making him relatable to people. And so for me, they need to continue on this path with Wesley. Maybe Sangha is just there as support, doesn't become a bodyguard, but is there for him when he needs him. But I really hope that they don't mess this up because him, Enofe, Roxanne Perez, Tiffany Stratton, these are all people, Carmelo Hayes, we could get to the barbershop segment if you want to because that was a tremendous segment, but these are the people you should be centering your 2.0 around and making them the anchors for the future because they are that talented. It just comes down to will the writing and booking team book them and write them well enough for the fans, not just in the crowd, but the fans who are watching to put their full support behind them, like with Sami Zayn, like with Montez Ford, like with Io Shirai, like with Asuka. You know, these are the people in, like Rhea Ripley too. These are the types of stories and the characters because of that build and that journey that leave an impact and leave an imprint on the promotion, on the show, and for the and you know, in history. So I really hope that's the way they go with Wesley. And I think Schneid, yes, he lost, but he has, since he's come back, he's just, I feel like he's done nothing wrong since he's come back.
All right, if you want to talk about the barbershop segment, I say, why don't we do that? I actually, I had a bit of a blip with Sling, so I missed like half of it. So I really
Sling's been doing that recently from what I can gather.
Yeah, like it's weird. So, I don't know. This is like a weird Sling thing, but like every time I log into Sling, I have to re-log in. It doesn't hold on to my login credentials. And I ended up, I accidentally refreshed the page. It wouldn't let me log back in. Yeah, it took me like 3 or 4 minutes to log back in, and I ended up missing a good chunk of that barbershop segment. So if you'd like to cover it, feel free and kind of fill me in on the things that I missed.
Sure. So just like all the other barbershop segments between Hayes and Williams, it was another fantastic segment. It just feels like, okay, black, and they're in a black barbershop. But it also feels like they're in their comfortable skin when they're in these kind of segments that are being recorded and whatnot, because they can just kind of be themselves, right? So they're going off, and Hayes is talking about, you know, Cameron Grimes might be champion, but I'm the A champion. And then all of a sudden, Cameron Grimes shows up in the doorway and comes and sits down in what was Trick Williams' seat to talk to Hayes face-to-face. And Hayes basically says, you know, I'm the A-champion, you're not the A-champion. And Grimes went, Grimes said, I'm the champion, but you might have been the A-champion, but you are just A-champion, and I'm the champion, right? So he's kind of turning his words on him. And Grimes basically ended it by saying that, he's going to show everyone that he's better than Hayes when it comes down to the match they're going to have next Saturday, and telling him that people are saying that Nathan Frazer is a better, faster version of you. So what better way for me to prepare to face you next Saturday than facing Nathan Frazer next Wednesday? And this really irked Hayes, and a lot of people on Twitter were saying that Cameron Grimes bodied Wesley on the mic in this segment. And Hayes, after Cameron Grimes got up and left, you could see on his face that he was just stewing, and the emotions on his face, like, oh, I'm going to get him. Ooh. Like, I just thought it was really well done to build their match, because how do I put this? I feel like Grimes was one of those people where the journey was better than him being champion. But tonight, and he's had good matches as champion, but his presentation as champion to me has been a little lacking. In this segment, I feel like he came off as a confident, not arrogant, champion who believes in himself and understands what it means to be champion. And Hayes had that look and the demeanor and the words of, I know what it means, champion, and I want to be champion again because I find my worth in being champion, which is what the best heels do in pro wrestling. They're all about their worth as champion. So for me, this was a great setup. Even though they still have one more episode left, I think this was a tremendous way, because you know that somehow next week, Hayes and Williams will get involved in the match with Grimes and Frazer. I feel like this setup with the barbershop, putting Hayes in his comfortable area, and then inserting Grimes into what might not be his comfort area, and yet coming off so well, really works to build anticipation to yet another match between, because let's remember, these two have been in match after match together, whether it's singles, whether it's tag team, whether it's triple threats, they've been in so many matches together. I can understand if people are, a bit over their feud, but I think this injected some new life into it and should lead to what will be another great match, possibly the best match on In Your House next Saturday, which I believe Nate and I will be covering after the show goes off the air.
That will be the case. It's not going to be a live call-in show as the post shows for these PLEs usually aren't. So it'll probably wind up being a VIP roundtable. But it will most likely be myself and Bruce. It doesn't look like Kelly's able to join, and nor Tom making a triumphant return to the podcast. So it'll probably be the two of us, unless I might be able to find somebody that wants in. Kevin, maybe. Anyway, I don't know. I'll DM you. Anyway. Let's see. Is there anything else that sticks out to you that you want to talk about? If not, then I think we'll probably wind up wrapping up here.
Real quickly, the only thing I'm interested in terms of Von Wagner is what's going to happen between Mr. Stone and Sophia Cromwell, because they're literally fighting over who's controlling Von Wagner, it seems like.
Yeah, it kind of does.
Stone
it?
Comes out to the ring and helps him there, but then after the match, Cromwell was the one telling him to do this and that, and he wanted to listen to Cromwell. And then in the segment afterwards in the back,
I mean,
I'd
listen to Cromwell too, honestly, but, you know.
Well, so that leads me to my point that she said that Von Wagner is capable of doing whatever he wants. And as she said that, she said it kind of slow and sultry, and she eyed Wagner up and down. So it seems like she's trying to use her sex appeal to get to Wagner, while Stone is trying to work as an actual manager to get Wagner to do his thing. So again, I'm not a fan of Von Wagner. I think tonight he looked better. His offense looked more emphatic. They still haven't named his finisher, which is a Rude Bomb, which Robert Roode used to do in TNA. But I just want to see what happens between Cromwell and Stone in regards to this whole situation with Von Wagner.
Yeah, that actually is a good point. It's like, Sophia, have they even named her yet? Like,
yes,
dropped her
yes.
name at all? They have.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
All right. I couldn't remember if they did or not. But yeah, it's going to be interesting to see, because, like, I don't know, Robert Stone or Mr. Stone, he's such an interesting character, and I feel like I don't know, the whole Robert Stone brand thing, you know, that they did about a year or so ago, like, that really started to grow on me, and his whole lovable loser type of a gimmick was cool, and now he's not necessarily that, but we're not seeing a whole lot of character development out of him. Mm-hmm. So it's almost kind of like, I'm wondering if they're going to wind up, you know, putting Von Wagner with Sophia Cromwell, writing Mr. Stone off of either writing him off of TV, bringing him off the main roster, releasing him or something, because he just doesn't feel really important anymore.
I don't think they'll release him. He's the perfect manager for a Vince McMahon led production.
Oh yeah, totally. But yeah, we'll see. I think he's got a lot to offer, you know, whether it be behind the scenes or in front of the camera. So
he could still wrestle if he wanted to as well.
Yeah, that's true too. I kind of forget that he Robbie E, you know, like, because he hasn't been a wrestler in WWE, but yeah. All right. So with that, I think we're going to call it the end of our show here, mostly because I'm fighting my eyelids at this point, and we're coming up on 12:05 a.m. here on the East Coast. So I am Nate Lindberg, and you can find me on Twitter at Nate Lindberg. Like I said, I write the NXT hits and misses. I do have one up for tonight, and I will have one up for In Your House next Saturday. Like I said earlier, Kevin, I keep saying Kevin. Sorry, Bruce. Bruce and I will be doing the post show for In Your House, so check that out if you are VIP, and we'll go from there. Bruce, who are you?
Need to reach to the internet and slap you right now, Nate Tease.
Please do.
So I am Bruce Lee Hazelwood. You can find me on Twitter at B_Lee253. I am one of the rotating reporters for NXT 2.0 or live reports. I will also be doing the report next week because Kelly has a family school event that he will be at with his daughter, I believe. So no Kelly next week again, but it's for a much better reason than being on the show and reporting on it. So next week I will be here again, both doing the report and on the show with Nate. So, just find my reports every Tuesday. I try to update them, or I do update them every commercial break, so that you're as up to date as possible.
All right, guys. And with that, we will talk with you next week. Take care.